Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us. Today I am joined by an absolutely amazing guest. It's Ellie Sheffy. Now Ellie describes her previous history with domestic violence. She had a previous marriage which wasn't nice. It was riddled with domestic violence, and Ellie goes through how that actually affected her emotionally and physically. But the main part of the story that I want to really highlight is how Ellie describes that that didn't define who she was. She did not let that take control of her life. She changed it and wanted to show people and tell people that there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is hope for everyone. So absolutely amazing and inspirational story. When you speak to Ellie, she is so enthusiastic about life and so infectious about what she talks about. She is literally the busiest person I have ever met, ever, to be quite honest with you. She's currently the dean of two universities. She is a trained barrister and solicitor, and she is currently, during lockdown period, started three businesses. She's wrote one book, and she's in the process of writing another book. Now, bear in mind, lockdown and quarantine has only been going for 10 weeks. So there you go. So guys, please listen to the story. It is an absolutely amazing and inspirational take on life. So without further ado, I welcome the absolutely fantastic, extremely talented Ellie Sheffy. And we're good. Ellie, how you doing?
Awesome. And yourself?
I'm doing okay. Stuck in quarantine as always. So it's all good fun.
I know, right? Week 10 and going strong.
We've reached the double figures now, Ellie. This is it.
I know. We're so fancy. We you know, double figures.
Double figures. Hopefully we'll stay in the ones, the kind of teens. Hopefully
oh my we'll goodness.
Crack into right? the 20s. If it goes into the 20s, I think we're in trouble.
Yes, for sure.
So Ellie, I've been looking forward to this episode, to be quite honest. We had a chat like before the recording, and I'm looking forward to this because you've been up to so much. But we'll talk about that later on because I'm dying. I'm getting ahead of myself now. I'm getting ahead of myself. Stop it. But so Ellie, we had a chat. We had you went through the bits and pieces of previously. What's happened, and go through this. I mean, tell people what's where your kind of background, where you are today, sort of thing, and how you got here.
Awesome. Well, we'll start with where I am now, so that it puts some context. But currently, I'm the dean of a law school. I'm the dean of a school of criminology and criminal justice. I've been an attorney for almost 20 years now, an educator for over 30 years. An entrepreneur for over 25. So, you know, I like a lot of downtime, obviously. I'm really good at twiddling my thumbs.
I was going to say, is there anything you don't do? Because that's quite a little bit, that's an impressive resume, to be quite honest with you.
I've also been a group fitness instructor and health and wellness coach for almost a decade. I've taught dance on a cruise ship. I've explored over 70 countries, and I've been to every continent, including Antarctica and the Arctic Circle. I really like to just kick my feet up and watch a bunch of movies.
If you got time, you must have like 1 hour a week to do that. So after all the stuff you've been up to.
Yeah, if only. I don't turn my TV on until I'm like in bed. That's I do watch TV every day, so I will say that I am normal like everybody else. But I don't turn my TV on until I'm in bed at the end of the night, and that's kind of my transition to turn my brain off, because otherwise my brain goes nonstop from morning until night.
They say having a TV in your room is bad for you. This is the reason I've not got one in mine. They say your bedroom should be the place of sleep. If you have a TV in there, you're not going to get that. So
they totally say that, and they totally say that like if you watch TV, you're not going to fall right asleep. Maybe it's because I pick really mindless crap that I'm asleep usually within a few minutes. So I'm not watching anything that has like a plot that I would actually need to tune into.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I've heard that too. For me, it just is that break that is the signal to my brain. Like, okay, we're going to bed now.
That's the problem I've had as well. Because I've not got a TV in my room, I keep downstairs. And for instance, on Friday, I was recording an episode with Guy Ramsay, and we're having a few drinks during it because it's Friday. Why not?
Yeah.
And after that, it was about an hour and a half long. So after that finished, I was like, right, I'm going to carry on because it's Friday and I've got them in the fridge. So why not? And yeah, literally passed out on the sofa, woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning going, what the hell am I doing? So that's the problem, having a TV downstairs and you've not got one upstairs, you fall asleep on the sofa more, I think.
Oh, right. And then, yeah, then by the time you actually get up and move, now you're awake again and what the hell?
And then you realize that you've got the pain in your neck is killing you because you're sitting like upright and you're just like, you're walking like some like Quasimodo up the stairs.
Right.
And you're like, Jesus, what's happening to my life? What's this come to?
Definitely. Agreed.
So yeah, so you kind of, you like your chill out time, which we all do. And what sort of stuff do you like to do in chill out time? What's the kind of the movies and programs of choice?
My complete mindless stuff are those ridiculous reality shows.
Oh, I love them. I love them.
I love them, mostly because I don't have to pay attention. There is no story. So if I fall asleep in the middle of it, who cares? I didn't miss anything at all.
That's it. My guilty pleasure. We've got a program over here called Geordie Shore, and it's like a ripoff of one you guys, like Jersey Shore in America.
Yeah.
And it is car crash TV. It is literally car crash TV.
But exactly.
I can't stop watching. I can't stop. Can't stop.
I love Married at First Sight. Who does that?
Oh my God.
Who gets in a legally binding marriage to a complete and utter stranger that they meet at the altar? Who does that?
And it's guaranteed to be a train wreck. Guaranteed to be a train wreck.
Guaranteed.
And it's so much fun, especially when you say like, oh, computers have sorted this like kind of compatibility formula to make sure you guys are together, you should be together, and they literally hate each other within a week.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like a lot of my past relationships, to be honest, but I should be on there. Hopefully none of you are listening to this, hopefully you're not, but if you are, it will be at some point. God, I'm taking myself a hole here now.
So you typically just run off on a honeymoon within like 12 hours of meeting somebody then, eh?
Well, I'm not going that far. Let's put it, I'm not going as far as that. I'm not going to lie to you, possibly could have done it at some point. But give it a few months, you know what I mean? Impulsive, why not? We're only young once, Ellie, come on.
Well, I was young a long time ago. That boat sailed. That ship is gone.
That's the thing. I like to think I was young a long time ago. And I'm on the wrong side of 40 now. So it's like, I still think I'm 21. So
well, I'm closer to 50 than I am to 40. So, wow. Yeah. So that ship sailed.
Yeah, exactly. They say that life starts at 40. So why not? I think that's, you say that when somebody comes to 40, go, yeah, life starts at 40. But when someone goes to 50, nah, it starts at 50. Nah, when it comes to 60, it starts at 60.
Like, I do have to say it gets better. It each decade is substantially better than the one before. And I never would have thought that, but it's true.
And don't you just hate it when you speak to the youngsters nowadays and they're like, oh, I feel so old. I was like, how old are you? I go, I'm 29. I just want to punch them right in the face.
What gets me, because, you know, with the university and being the staff attorney for a federal judge, like I oversee the law students and they're talking about things that happened like I was married and divorced before they were even born. And I'm like, okay, yeah, now I feel really old.
No, that's it. It's like, oh my God. It's especially when you're in that sort of age and you look back and you think the year 2000, remember the year 2000, you're like, oh, that was only a few years ago. That was 20 years ago.
I know.
What's happened since then?
Right? Y2K?
Remember. See, you don't know. You think this coronavirus is bad. You know, we went through Y2K. You know nothing. These kids nowadays. I shouldn't really compare this to the Y2K. A little bit more serious than that. But it's a similar sort of mindset. So a similar sort of like kind of reaction.
Yeah, well, I remind them that email did not exist. Didn't exist when I graduated high school. Wow. Cell phones didn't exist when I graduated high school. Cell phones didn't exist when I graduated college. I was married before I got my first cell phone, and it looked like a brick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the thing is, you see people that nicking, like kind of stealing and thieving the phones nowadays because they're like the Apple. You didn't see that back then because they used to use the phones as a freaking weapon.
Exactly. You know?
somebody runs up to you, give me your phone. No, you just go bang, have some of that.
Right, then you're good, you know? Like, and that was a brick. It would have knocked them out.
Yeah, the thing is, you can knock them out, take a big swing, twat them over the head with it, and then pick the phone back up, and it will still work, so you can phone the police.
Exactly. I mean, maybe the flip part of it might be a little wonky, yeah, but it'll still work.
Try doing that with an iPhone nowadays. No chance.
No chance. Shatters into a million pieces.
Yeah, then you have to spend money to get the screen taken off and get it replaced, and it's just like, oh, for God's sake. What'd you do to the phone? I smashed someone over the head with it. Oh, okay. As you do.
Yeah, so times, you know.
It's good fun.
I wonder what it's going to be like in 20 years from now.
Flying cars.
Probably.
I'm going for flying cars because I've been dying to see a flying car since I've been a kid after watching all these kind of old school, like, 80s films that say, like, oh, like,
Back to the future.
Back to the future.
The Jetsons.
When they come out with hoverboards, remember that? They go, we've got hoverboards coming out. I'm like, oh, my God, the future is now. And then all it was just a little board with wheels on it. That ain't a hoverboard. I was like, what the hell? And then you see people walking down the street. I actually walked to the shops, not when all they came out. And this is this kid, hands in his pockets, with his little backpack on, probably going to college, just cruising down the street. And then, what is going on? Is this real life?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, an episode of the Jetsons.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. So I'm hoping for flying cars. That'd be quite cool.
Yeah. I bet Elon Musk is working on it.
I bet he's got one already, but he's just not telling anyone.
You never know.
That guy's literally, every time I hear Elon Musk, I'm like, what's he doing now? What is he up to? He's like, I'm going to put a car in space. Why? Because I can. I'm like,
because why not?
You can't knock that. You can't knock that. You're like, fair enough, mate. You know, I mean, if I could do it, I'd do it.
Right? I mean, why not?
Why
if you
not?
Could, like, if your car could fly over traffic. I mean, I live in LA. Like, do you know how, like, what an amazing thing that would be? It takes you 4 hours to go 10 miles.
It does. I can imagine. The LA traffic is notoriously bad. I keep hearing this all the time. I've never been before. And I don't think, because I hate traffic. I think traffic is like the bane of existence. And
yeah.
It's horrible. But every time I hear about people talk about LA, they say, do not drive there because you're actually going to get from like 10 miles is going to take you like 3 hours.
Yeah. It's faster to just walk. Just walk. Or don't go.
Or get a hoverboard. Get one of them.
There you go.
And you look awesome at it as well. You know,
take a surfboard up the coast.
Yeah, that's it. That's what you're going to get. Why do people not do that? Oh, there you go. You've just nailed it. That's another business opportunity there for you, Ellie. Get some of that.
There you go. I need another natural. One.
I know, yeah, naturally. Just how many businesses you got? Too many.
Yeah.
So Ellie, we're talking a bit before, but obviously the bits and pieces that you do. I mean, it's... You keep yourself busy. So, how did we get to, obviously, where you are now? How did you get to where you are?
So, I grew up on the border of Long Beach and Compton, which is a really rough area. I did actually legitimately go to high school with Snoop. Seriously. With Snoop and Sublime, Cameron Diaz, Tiffany Thiessen, as far as sports goes, with Keyshawn Johnson or Willie McGinnis. So yeah, definitely. I am from the LBC, so all the stuff you see in Snoop's videos, those were the back end of my high school, the across the street, VIP Records. So I do come from an area that's a little rough.
How do you remember them back then? I mean, what they were like and all that sort of
stuff? Oh, yeah, they're exactly the same as they were.
Oh, really? I
mean, Sublime, some of them are no longer here, but yeah. Same, you know, and people like Snoop, they give back. He still has, he's very involved in the community. He's very involved in his little football program. He's hands-on. So that's super important to that area. I mean, that area needs mentorship. They need that kind of involvement. But growing up there, and like I said, I'm older, so growing up there, I was in high school during the LA riots. What the whole world saw as being on fire were the streets surrounding my high school. So it was interesting times, but coming from that, like, it definitely shaped kind of everything I've done since. And being in a rough area, I had a lot of abuse and I was raped, and then I ended up in a domestic violence marriage, and then I was anorexic, and then when you have all that kind of trauma, it leads to a lot of health effects, because our bodies are not made to live in fight or flight. We have fight or flight, we have, you know, adrenal glands and adrenaline and all of that, because it's part of our 2,000-year-old brain to keep us safe. But when you live in that state, then there's a lot of health effects. So that has kind of, you know, spanned the last 22 years, and that has had a lot of results. And then I had cancer, and so not able to have kids, and, you know, lots and lots and lots. I could go on and on and on about kind of all the stuff that has, quote unquote, happened in my life. But I have decided at a young age and through everything that life happens for me, not to me, and that with every single thing that happens, I'm able to learn from that and use that as fuel to project me and propel me into the future. And I choose to frame everything as what a gift that I am in control. Doesn't matter who did what to me. It doesn't matter what cards life dealt to me. I hold the keys to the jail. So I can frame myself just by how I frame things. And it's very empowering to frame everything from a position of, I get to decide what those events mean to me. I get to decide how I want to use those events. I am in control of that. The events are not in control of me. And so obviously I've used them to their full potential, because now I do everything. So a little bit about kind of my journey.
So, you've had a really, as you mentioned before, a lot of stuff going on. Obviously, to kind of put a nice way of putting it, sort of thing. You went through a lot of trauma and things like that. Where you mentioned that the transition from that, what was really the moment that really said, like, I need to click, not that click, that euphoric moment, the epiphany, they always like kind of call it, to go bang. What was anything really, or was it a gradual process?
I think there have been several times. I would say one of the biggest times is when I was in hiding after the domestic violence marriage. I will say to everybody out there who has been in the situation, as much as I have my stuff together, I did not leave voluntarily. And I always stress that when I speak on domestic violence, when I speak to women, when I speak to men, when I speak to young attorneys who are helping at a domestic violence clinic, anything like that, I had every reason to leave. I was not the stereotypical. I didn't have kids. I had a job. I'm quite well educated. I had a car. I had the my own money. I had the ability to leave, quote unquote, but I was not able to leave. Mentally, emotionally, it just, I wasn't in that place. I didn't have that strength. By that point, I had resigned myself to, it's just easier to do what you're told because then life is easier. But I was pulled out by my dad, who had called the cops after he kind of figured out what was happening. And they literally came in and like pulled me up.
Got you.
Yeah. And they put me in hiding with like a pseudonym and all of that. And when I was in hiding, I literally had to start over. Here I was already in law school by that point, so,
so you couldn't go back. Could you have to leave everything behind, as in leave? Obviously,
I left everything. I had nothing. Like, so I walked away with, you know, nothing. Like, I walked away from the marriage. No, like settlement. No, nothing. I didn't even get to get money for like my medical bills or all of the therapy that then I was in. I mean, I was like not functional, even though at that point I was 26 and in law school. I went to a top 10 law school. So like I said, you would think that I would have been in a different place, but I wasn't, and that's okay. So I was in therapy like 9 to 12 hours a day. Rebuilding. At that point, I could not even go to the grocery store because nobody told me what to buy. So I would run out of the grocery store in hysterical tears. And
is that just because all of the mental abuse you were receiving beforehand, was it?
Yeah.
And the control, so the controlling aspect behind that relationship.
Yeah, I had become kind of a robot. I just did what I was told because that was the path of least resistance, and less bad stuff would happen if you just did what you were told and what was expected of you. So when it got to the point that then I was living in the middle of nowhere with a pseudonym and I was on my own, nobody told me what to do. So literally for 6 months, I ate the exact same thing for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner every day, because that was as much as I could manage, was to still have like autopilot.
Yeah.
And I wasn't able to go to the grocery store. And finally, through all of my work with the healing teams, they would make me, they would say, you cannot call us until you buy something at the grocery store. We don't care what you buy, but
you
have to go in there and buy something.
Do you remember what the first thing you did buy?
Yes. So the first time, because even in the midst of all this, I'm a smart cookie. And I like to kind of figure out ways to kind of play the system, so to speak. So I bought every variety pack of oatmeal the store sold. So that way I bought something, but I didn't actually have to make a decision, because I bought every variety pack. So I bought every kind. That was what I bought. And from the day I bought them and to the day that I left phase one of hiding and moved on to the next place, I never opened a single one of the boxes.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm. Because I bought them because I was told I had to buy something.
Right.
But then nobody told me which one to eat.
Oh, right. So it was still,
stuck
in the back of the head there.
Yeah. So I just never opened them. So I like to, I'm an open book, obviously. I like to use my story as an example because I'm not the stereotype. And to look, that was literally like 20 years ago. And to look at what can be accomplished even in the face of all of that.
Yep.
20 years ago, I couldn't buy something at the grocery store. And now I'm the dean at a university of two schools. I'm the staff attorney to a federal judge. I run three companies that I started. I'm an award-winning author. written a book. I'm developing e-courses and workshops. I'm starting 3 global movements. I'm a speaker. I am a coach. All of these things within a short period of time.
And it also, it proves that there is light at the end of the tunnel for someone who's just who are going through it or is scared to come out of it or has just recently come out of that situation, such as yourself, that there is light at the end of the tunnel. There is something out there that you can actually do. You don't need to be stuck in that sort of life, you know. Isn't a life, if that makes sense, you know.
Yeah. And we're in control of that. So you asked about like pivot points or epiphany moments. And when I was so broken and so not functional, and I had been taken to ground zero, I chose in that moment to choose who I wanted to be when I rebuilt. And I looked at it as an opportunity. All right, well, there's nothing left of the person I was. There's nothing left of that 26 years up until that point. What an amazing opportunity that I'm a completely clean slate, and that, well, hell, if I've got to rebuild, let's choose what that looks like.
Yeah, choose to do it on your own terms instead of someone else's.
Mm-hmm. It's really empowering when you're able to leave behind the crap that was put on you by somebody else, or put on you by society, or put on you by expectation, or put on you by your life circumstance, or put on you by your economic circumstance, or put on you in whatever way that was. When you can free yourself of that and say, oh, hell no, that's who they wanted me to be, that's who they said I am, but from this point forward, I say who I am. Right. And I say what my life will be like.
Because this is the thing as well, with you mentioned about the society side of things and your kind of pigeonholed, and this is what we should be like. And a lot of people out there, they're probably thinking, well, I've not done anything with my life significant. But they don't realize that they actually have.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are small significant parts of their lives that they don't realize that you have done that. You've got a job that the job that you've been dreaming to have. They might not think that's a big deal, but
it's a big deal.
You just don't realize it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I've moved to a different location, or I've moved to a different state or country, you know.
That's amazing.
And that is a huge thing. But some of them don't realize that you have actually done some great things. So when it comes to something they actually think is a big thing, it's not a big thing, because it's flipped, if that makes sense. You know, they've already done huge things, but what you're worrying about now is so small and insignificant.
Yeah.
But it's just your mind make it into that sort of thing, because it's like that. And I think that is when you say like the society thing and all that sort of stuff, and it's breaking free of that is one of the biggest things. I think one of the biggest challenges we do have right now, to be fair, going forward, life, to be quite honest.
For sure. And I think one big turning point for me just in that idea that, you know, that you're touching on with kind of like the milestones that society says we should have and things like that. Yeah. I'll never forget. I was in Fiji and I didn't know what I was getting myself into, because the main island of Fiji is one way. But I was like, yay, let's just go on an adventure. Here's this thing where I can go island hopping, and like this boat is just going to dump me on these different islands for God knows how long and then come back and get me and take me to another island. I was like, yay, fun, let's do that. So I was with my sister, and the boat drops us. We go for a very long time on the boat. The boat drops us in the middle of nowhere on this little island. We have no idea what we're getting ourselves into, but we go to this island. We find out there's no power on the island. No electricity, no restaurant, no coffee.
Uh-oh,
that was the big one. I really struggled with the no coffee. So no power, no hot water, outhouses in the jungle. So your hut's over here, but the outhouse is over here, and you got to go through the sand and the rocks and the jungle and the God only knows what, with no light and You know, no cell service, no nothing. Even the people who are on the island don't know when the boat's coming back. So, like, you're on there until the boat comes back. And the first 24 hours, I gotta say, were a little rough for me. I am not a princess by any means. However, I do like electricity.
I think we all do. I think we all do, to be honest.
Like, I would like to see where the bathroom is. I don't really want to get bit by a snake or something, you know, on the way to the toilet. I would really like...
Biting you in the toilet. That's the main concern.
Right? I would really actually like the bathroom in the same basic structure where I am staying. You know, and I would like warm water. It doesn't have to be hot, but warm would be nice. And coffee would be nice.
The simple things, Ellie. The simple,
simple things. So my sister and I were a little shell-shocked and did not have... It took us a minute, a good 24 hours to settle in. But what we noticed, and this was a turning point for me for, like, kind of my acceptance of what society said.
Right.
The people on this island were the happiest people I have ever seen anywhere in my life. And I've been to 70 countries. These people literally had to work together because, like, that's it. You are who you are. And everybody, there's no restaurant. There's no anything.
Yeah.
So literally, you know, you got some people climbing trees to get coconuts and bananas. You got other people spearfishing to bring in, you know, fish for the entire island. You have other people cooking rice. And they had a big communal hut. And the hut was like the chow hall, but it was just literally a hut. So it was open on the sides and it had a cowbell. And like, as people were gathering all the things that they were gathering, they would bring it to this hut and kind of the women elders would cook. And when there was food ready, they would ring the bell and the whole island would come together to eat what had been prepared from everybody's, It was crazy. And everybody looked out for everyone else's kids and the kids played together. They didn't have anything. Like, the toy was a shell, a rock, a leaf. They had nothing. And they were so happy and so free. And, you know, they don't have an education. They don't have news. They don't have a cell phone. They don't know when anybody's coming, but they It was really a turning point for understanding we don't need what we think we need, and we don't have to be who society says we are, because most of us in this society are not nearly a fraction of as happy as those people with nothing.
Yes,
in the middle of nowhere.
It's that carefree lifestyle, haven't they? That's what they're looking. They've not got any external influences. They're happy in their community. They come together, and it's like the human spirit sort of thing. And I'm a massive advocate of this. I'm a bit kind of huge thing about the human spirit. And whenever someone says that, oh, they're down out, but you can get over anything, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's with that, switching everything off and just focusing on each little part and each little bit that you've got to go through, it's amazing what you can actually do.
Yeah, yeah. And the power of decision, right? They're happy because they decide that this is their paradise. Mm. When a boat comes, they could get on it. You know, they decide to work together. They decide to be a community. They decide to look after each other's kids. They decide to pitch in. Somebody could say, I'm not climbing a tree. I'm not getting coconuts. But that's like...
Well, the thing is, it's definitely say, well, if you don't do that, you're not going to eat. Simple as that, isn't it? If you don't put the work in, you're not going to eat for that day.
Yeah.
And it's having that survival mindset, but then it's ingrained in them and it's actually part of it's just normal. It's normal life. It's like, just like us getting up in the morning, obviously cooking, making coffee. It's just, simple. It's just part of their lifestyle.
Yeah. Yeah. It was magic. So that was another turning point for just changing my mindset.
Yeah.
You know?
That really kind of resonated and just kind of mm-hmm. kicked in. And I can imagine it would do. It really kind of opens your eyes when you see, I don't want to say like how the other people live, but it's how different people do live, if that makes sense. So it is a little bit how other people live.
Yeah.
It shows you and puts a lot of things into perspective, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the first 24 hours, I kind of was adjusting. And then I decided to embrace it. And so same thing, you get up when the sun rises, you go to sleep when the sun goes down. You explore because there's nothing else to do. just to embrace it and to pitch in and to help out. Like, it actually ended up being one of the most magical experiences of my life. Once I got past the, oh my God, where am I and what just happened here? And when is the boat coming back? How long am I here?
So how long were you there for?
Only maybe 3 days.
Oh, so it was enough to really kind of make you think, really, sort of thing.
Yeah, because especially when, like, the boat dropped us and we didn't know when it was coming back, because it only comes back when there's other people it's bringing or something like that. So it's not coming all the way out there just for you.
So you had to really kind of mentally prepare. This could be 2 weeks. This could be a week or 5 days. So you had to really mentally prepare. Right, I'm here for a long time. So you have to
really... I mean, that's when you just decide. It all goes back to the power of decision, right? And the power of the meaning that we give things. All right, I was there. I could have continued to struggle with the fact that I was stepping on, I don't know what, going through the fields over yonder, you know, to go pee in the middle of the night. Or I could just embrace it and be grateful that there even was an outhouse and that this was an adventure, and to find the beauty in it and to embrace the experience like the gift that it was. I mean, that's all just a choice, right?
Of course, of
course.
It's all
just a choice and how we frame things.
Definitely, definitely. So when you were out in the Fiji, you said that was a pivotal moment. When you came back home, was it just like, right, let's do something. Let's get in about it. You know, did you finish law school by that point, or was that still in the background? You were still doing that?
So at that point, I had finished law school.
Right.
So one of my first big turning points was, like I said, when I was still in law school and I had to rebuild and figure out who I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. When I finished the first phase of hiding, I did move to Europe. And that's really where I was able to flourish, because I felt safe. I felt like nobody was going to find me there. And I felt like in that phase two of healing, I could really kind of rebuild.
Did you manage to come to the UK?
I did. I spent 6 weeks.
Ooh,
straight.
Where did you go? Where did you go?
Everywhere. In college, I was an English major. And so I did the geeky thing and I thought, oh, yay. You know, I studied all this British lit and I really loved it. And so I was going to do kind of the English majors tour of the UK. Because I wanted to see, of course, Shakespeare and the Lake District. And so all of the authors that came out of the Lake District. And then I am a huge music fan and I love art, music, culture, history. So of course I wanted to hit Edinburgh and I wanted to hit Glasgow and I wanted to go to Wales and I wanted to go to Ireland because my dad used to tell me stories of Dublin and I wanted to go all throughout England and just kind of experience history. And yeah, it was just 6 weeks went by really quick.
How did you go on with it?
Several times since, but
how did you get on with the accents? Because every time I speak to a lot of people from like the US or from like different countries and stuff, they always say to me, they goes, they cannot believe that the UK is such a small country, but they've got so many accents and dialects in such a small place. And I'm just like, you think about it, it's kind of true, really, because you've got the southern, you've got the London, then you've got down the bottom left, you've got obviously the Cabristo accent and all that sort of stuff, then you've got Wales. And the further north you go, that's when you need the subtitles. You know? That's when the subtitles kick in. You know, you got to Newcastle, and that's just a noise. And then, and then you go to Scotland, and then you're just gone. That's it. Just no hope. Just no hope. I'm just not going to talk to anyone because I have no idea what they're saying. It might be nice to me, but I don't know.
I think for me, because I've been traveling internationally since I was 16 months old, and I love it, and I love learning about other cultures, and I love learning about people and history and all of that.
Yeah.
I think for me, the different accents just make me listen harder. They make me tune in and focus more. You can't really check out for a second. Because if you check out, then you're really lost. But at least if you're dialed in and you're following the conversation, then even if you miss a particular word, your brain can kind of fill in the gaps. And so it hasn't been a problem. I think for me, the biggest problem actually was in Andalusia, in southern Spain.
Oh, okay.
That for me, that was a train wreck. And I speak Spanish, but that was a whole different world.
Oh, really? Is that just because it's like different from what you're used to? So, oh, different dialects or?
It's a different dialect, but I'm good with dialects. But what they do is they smush everything together. It's kind of like in Scotland, how you guys drop off part of the word. Yeah, lose a syllable in there. Yeah. So in Andalusia, they chop off the back end, chop off the front end, smush it all together, and it's all just one long thing. And so
a noise, it's just a long noise.
Yeah, and you're like, wait, could you just enunciate? If you finished one word before you started the next word, I could follow along. Yeah. We could play follow the leader. But right now, it is a big old truncated mess with a little of this and a little of that, and I don't know what you're saying.
Brilliant. That's great. See, I've traveled a lot. Favorite country you've been to?
Spain.
Spain. Nice.
Yeah, I will live in Barcelona one day. At least
for a year.
Oh, yeah.
Was that the goal when you decided to kind of hang up everything and just kind of hang up your boots and decide to go?
I hang up my boots, I will be a global citizen. And I thank God for Airbnb because I won't need to own anything. I'll just go here for a month and then there for a month and here for a month and over there for a month.
That's it.
And just wander and make a little cycle so that I'm hitting the best weather in each of my favorite places. And off I go.
Off you go. So I can't believe it. It's you've been through a hell of a lot and you've come out great. And it's really inspiring to listen to, that you can see if anyone's actually listening or watching this, that it doesn't matter where you come from, what sort of situation there is life out there. There is light at the end of the tunnel.
There is, absolutely. It does not matter what happens to you. You're not your circumstances, your decisions. And that is a really empowering thing. So for myself and anyone else that has gone through a lot of stuff, sometimes it can feel like we don't have power. It can feel like everything's happening to us. Everyone's doing all these things to us. And we can feel swallowed up in that, or powerless, or like we don't have a voice anymore, or that we don't get a say in our life. But really, we have the key, and it's in our brain, and our decision shapes our life, not our circumstances.
Yeah. And it's just, I would imagine just doing the small things consistently,
yep,
just to get there. And then from that, you can build on that. You know, it's every step at a time, I would imagine.
Yeah. I mean, every minute is a choice. Every day is a choice. I mean, we've been in quarantine. Like I said, I'm in California. I think this is week 10, maybe week 11. I don't know. It all blurs together. but I have used this time. I'm still working my jobs, so that's, you know, those are my responsibilities. I'm still working all of that, keeping everything running. But I just decided that I was going to look at this time as a gift, and I was going to maximize this time. So in this time, I've launched 3 companies. In this time, I've written a book that's now being edited and formatted and soon to be released. In this time, I've started book number 2 already.
I'm not going to lie to you, Ellie, you're making me feel incredibly lazy right now. You've done this. Let's back up a minute here. This is a bit of a, this is impressive. Three companies and you've already released one book and on the second one again.
Yeah.
Wow. First of all, let's go into the book. The first book's interesting. We mentioned this before. What's the first book going on? What made you want to do it? Because it's a good story to this, I think.
Yeah. So my book actually is a direct response to COVID. So I have a group of really good girlfriends who they're by themselves. They're the sole breadwinners. They are entrepreneurs. They have busted their butt to make successful companies. And they were riding high. And COVID came and directly hit their businesses. One had a food tour company. Well, with the airlines being shut down and borders being closed and tourism shutting down and restaurants being ordered to shut down, literally her entire business went from ridiculously successful, being booked out for months, to having to close their doors and refund everybody.
Wow, that's shocking how much this has affected so many.
Yeah, I mean, even just talking about it, like, oh, it's like a dagger to the heart, and it's not even my business. But to see several of my friends go through this, I am a master problem solver. I am exceptionally resourceful. It's how I've gotten through life. I can always figure out a way. I can always figure out a solution. I can always figure out a path forward. It's what I've had to do every day of my life for my life. And so I reached out to them and I said, hey guys, let's get on a Zoom call. Like, I'm not going to let this happen to you.
Yeah.
And so we got on a Zoom call. I was thinking it would only be maybe an hour and we would kind of brainstorm, but it turned into a full 3-hour workshop where we went step by step by step. And because I know their businesses, I was really able to give them actionable pivot plans, diversification plans, ways that they could maintain relationships with their existing clients, ways that they could expand their client base, kind of gave them a whole new business plan within those 3 hours, and they started to implement them. On the call, they were like, oh my God, this is amazing. This is life changing. You have to write a book, because if you could do this for us in 3 hours, you can do it for other people. And yeah, in this time of crisis during COVID and, you know, all of the recovery that it's going to be for a while, post COVID, as we figure out what the new normal is and go from there. They're like, you need to launch this. And so I thought, well, I'm in quarantine, so why not? And I did. I wrote the book. It is called...
Oh, here we go. Shameless plug.
I have a picture of the cover because, like I said, it is with the editors and publishers.
And what's the book called for the people who are listening?
It is Unlocking Your Superpower, 8 Steps to Turn Your Existing Knowledge into Income. I wrote the book teaching you how to go from literally nothing to a thriving business using entirely free resources. Because I think that's a bunch of crap when they tell you it takes money to make money. I can tell you that is not true at all. And there are lots of ways and tons of free resources. So literally the book is geared for, all right, either you had a business and it's shut down and now you need to diversify or you need a pivot plan, or it completely shut down and now your niche is a little dead, like food tours.
Yeah, just from outside influences sort of thing. It's not your doing sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, okay, what else could you start? What can you get off the ground quickly and monetize quickly, start bringing in income quickly? So it walks you through figuring out what you know, what your skills are, what you're passionate about, then figuring out kind of where they intersect, where your superpower is. Because I think, especially when you're choosing, going back to choosing and getting to decide, okay, you don't get to decide what happened. COVID happened. It is what it is. Now we get to decide where we go from here and what we want this next chapter to be. So if you're going to get to decide, let's pick something that you know that you're really good at and that you love. Life's too short to do stuff you hate, especially when you're getting to choose it. So I hope you figure out that intersection of your superpower. And then we walk into, okay, now you know that, but what are you going to do with it? So what's the problem you're going to solve, or the frustration you're going to alleviate, the need you're going to meet, or how are you going to make somebody's life easier, more convenient, that kind of thing. So we'll go through that. And then we figure out, all right, now you know what your superpower is and you know how you want to use it, but who are you going to use it for? So it's about then figuring out who your perfect person is and then finding them. And I teach you how to find them using free resources. And then teach you how to connect with them and build relationships with them, again, using free resources. Then we walk you through, great, now you know all that, but let's build you a brand and a business. And so what do you need to get started legally? How do you figure out what your brand is going to be and your brand voice and your brand identity and kind of the messaging that you want? So I walk you through all of that, again, using free resources. Then we all need a tribe, right? You need peers, because you need somebody who's at least one step ahead of you, right?
Yep.
Instead of paying for coaching, which coaches are great. I have a ton of them and I am a coach. And so, hey, you can always pay me. But I give you free resources where you can find people that you can network with, that will mentor you, that you can partner with for free. So that you really have that tribe. You have the brainstorming, you have the support, you have the mentorship. So we go through all of that, and then I teach you how to increase your visibility and your engagement. I teach you how to figure out how to monetize things. What's your price going to be? What are you offering? How are you structuring that? So we go through the monetization and the business aspect. And then, all right, now you've put in this work, let's create some staying power. So let's make sure that you're building your foundation in a way that you can have the longevity and the staying power. And then we talked about this earlier, but I devote a whole section in the book on celebrating your wins, you know, acknowledging all your little steps, because every single step is progress, and it's a journey. And as long as you're moving forward, even if that's the day we're one step forward, two steps back, you're still on your journey, and it's being able to celebrate those wins each and every day.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to give you the fuel to continue on.
The motivation, and it keeps you going. Exactly. Gets you that motivation to keep you going. Even the little ones. Because I did my business before, I had to really have the little wins, you know, just to keep me going. This is why I do this, you know.
Yeah. Every single win. I mean, every single thing you celebrate. I start my day with a celebration. I do a little dance party in bed just because I woke up. Right? It's just training myself. It's ingraining in myself to celebrate and to find joy and to find gratitude. It's just a little mental hack. It's totally cheesy, but my eyes open and every day I go, good morning. Today is an awesome day. Today is an awesome day. And I do a little dance party, and it's so totally cheesy, but you know what? It sets the tone for the day. And
I might try that tomorrow morning when I wake up.
It's actually really fun and it's totally cheesy. So you got to find whatever works for you. But for me, starting that with the very first thing, being joyful, being celebratory, being excited, being positive, setting the intention that it's an awesome day, even if it goes to crap in 10 minutes, like I'm framing it as like, this is fun. This is awesome. Yay. You know?
Because it's an old way of doing it, really. Well, not an old way of doing it, but it's obviously been told before about how you start your day is like the pivotal of how your day is going to be. If you start your day well and you do things well and you do one thing towards whatever you're accomplishing that day, you do one thing first thing in the morning. It could be like making your bed, for instance, or as you say, like kind of big song and dance and making you feel good. That basically sets you up for the rest of the day.
Yeah. And also then you're taking control. You're setting the tone.
Yeah.
Because I cannot tell you how many times, I mean, with all the jobs I work and the companies I'm starting and all of the balls that I juggle, if I just reach over to my phone There are dozens of new emails. First thing my eyes open, look, they're all waiting and everybody wants something and most of them are complaining or needing something by 10 minutes ago or in 10 minutes or, you know, whatever. If I were to just open my eyes, reach over and grab my phone, and I see that chaos, right?
Yeah.
Of everybody else's junk that they're putting on me and their expectations that they're putting on me and the demands they're putting on me. If that's the first thing in the morning, my day is shot. Forget it. Like, I'm playing catch up. I'm behind the eight ball. I'm not in the driver's seat. My mood is crap. Like, no, 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 no. I like to say, you are not the boss of me. My little petulant child comes out. Oh, no, 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 no. You do not get to control my life. I do not think so. And, you know, no, no, this is on my terms. You will get that by your deadline, but you will get it when I give it to you.
Yeah. So. Don't be bullied into other people's deadlines, sort of thing.
Yeah. Like, it's just a little mental hack. I always need a deadline. So they give me a deadline. I'm going to follow their deadline. They will have it. But it's a little nuance in taking control, taking my power back, me setting the tone of my day, me staying in the driver's seat. It's just choices and decisions. But because I know that that's what's going to be waiting for me when I open my eyes and I check my phone, I'm not going to start my day like that. So my eyes are going to open and I'm going to say, good morning. Today is an awesome day. Today is an awesome day. Today. And I'm going to do a little dance party and I'm going to like set the tone.
Set the tone.
And then I'll check all that. And sure enough, it never disappoints me. It's always exactly like I knew it would be.
That's true. Because I think that's a great technique. That's a great technique. Set yourself up for the day. Once you do that, even in sort of this time, no, because we've got nothing to really look forward to in a minute. Everyone's still shut down. Everyone's still stuck at home. But if you do wake up having that sort of like, I'm going to be amazing today, you know, and using that cheesy motivation, that might work for some people, but some people might want to do something else. You know what I mean?
Hey, you find whatever works for you. I'm not saying that like everyone has to do that. I'm saying find your hack. Take control and find what works for you. It is so cheesy. And yes, it's just a mental hack. It's a trick that we use. But what's the downside? Like, find what works for you that allows you to wake up and feel motivated and joyful and in control and where you're in the driver's seat. I know, like, it's so hard for parents. The little one comes in at 5 a.m. Mommy, 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 I need, I need, I need. Okay. So then grab the little one and do your little happy dance.
Yeah, do
or do something to like change it to where you're now back in control.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the good thing about it, no one's going to see you. See, there's no reason to be embarrassed.
And nobody cares.
No,
you know what? Make it fun. Like, I'm alone, but if you have a spouse next to you and your spouse gives you an eye roll, then who cares? Okay, do a tickle fest. I don't know. Figure out whatever works for the two of you.
One of my friends actually used to do some similar every Friday. He used to put on his phone. As soon as he woke up with his missus next to him, he used to put on that, that Friday, that new film. And I don't know if he still does it now, but he used to come in giggling because he goes, my missus now hates me. I do it every Friday, but it's always funny. And it's them.
That's the thing. It's like, if you can start your day with a laugh, or you can start your day with fun, or you can start your day with gratitude, anything you can do to start the day positive, like, what's the harm in that? So find your hack. Try out different things. Maybe it's as simple as, like, for me, when I really need to get in the zone, I play Eye of the Tiger. Works every time. There's something about that, like, you know what I mean? There's just something about that that makes me feel like I can do this. Like, I am on it. So maybe you change your alarm clock wake up song to a fun song or your favorite song or just a completely cheesy song or a song that you can't help but sing to, yeah. So that when you're being woken up, instead of being woken up to meh, 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 which just makes us angry and want to throw it across the freaking room.
Hate it.
You're woken up to Dancing Queen, or you're woken up to YMCA, or you're woken up to Baby Got Back, whatever. You know, it's like, it all goes back to just that we're so empowered to be able to choose these things, and we can set whatever works for you.
Yeah. So when it comes to obviously the book that you made before, it's free resources, because I want to touch on this, because every time you open up your computer, every time you Google something, or every time you go on Facebook or any social media, there's always an advert. I will make your business great within 10 weeks. Just spend £5,000. Reduced to £100 for this special deal for you. And everyone gets caught into it. And I've not kind of caught into it yet, because there's a guy that's over in the UK. He's Mike Winnett, and he's a entrepreneur. And the reason why he says that, he tries and exposes these people. And his YouTube channel is fantastic. If anyone's listening to this, and go type in Mike Winnett on YouTube, and you'll see how he defuncts all these people. You know, make millions through real estate, make millions through cryptocurrency. So it goes through it. So it's really great. So you see all this information coming through to you, saying buy this, and it's really saturated. And it's great that you've obviously come across and say there is actually options to do it for nothing. There's options there.
Yeah.
How did you find that out? Did you do a lot of research behind it, or did it something you already knew?
So I've done a lot of research, but I've also, first of all, anybody that tells you you're going to make millions with something, you should run the other way. Just know that it's not true.
It's too good to be true.
Right. Just run. Because anyone who's actually at that level, who's really genuinely done it, will tell you that there is no magic pill, that they busted their butt to get there, that, you know, they earn the right to be there. But I digress. So I have taken a ton of courses. I have spent an ungodly amount of money over the years to learn things, never for like a magic pill or any like a get rich quick or anything like that, but because I love to learn, and I know my strength is problem solving. My strength is connecting. My strength is speaking. So I don't need courses on that, but the technology aspect, or things like, how do you grow your email list, or effective marketing strategies. I was an English major and I'm an attorney. Like, I didn't go to business school. Everything I've learned about business is by working my way up the ranks. I've worked multiple jobs since I was 10. So I've done it all, and I am very observant, and I pay attention, and I ask questions, and I like to learn. So I've learned through life, not through an MBA. Yeah. But it's served me really well. And because I came from a family that didn't have money, and I've been homeless, I've lived in my car, I've had to beg fast food restaurants for the food they were going to throw away at the end of the night. I have done it. And then as an entrepreneur, in my early days, back 18, 19, when I was starting my first real businesses, I graduated from sleeping in my car to then running one of those little tiny executive offices that's like 150 square feet, like one little room, you know, with then the community bathroom and the community kitchen and all of that. But I graduated to that, and then I lived in there and also worked in there. And I know you're not supposed to live in there because it's commercial, but, you know, it was better than my car. So working my way up. So I learned through life. And building different businesses, very successful, that paid for me to go to school, that have paid for me to have a house, that have done all that kind of thing. I had to get creative. I had to learn the hacks. I had to, whenever there's a paid way, I can promise you there's a free way. You pay for the free way. You pay for the course on the free way when you want to compress decades into days, when you're paying for speed.
Yeah, you're paying for time again, isn't it?
Yeah, so all of the courses that I've paid for, and like I said, I have spent an ungodly amount of money on courses, is so that I can learn faster, so that I don't have to go through the process myself of trial and error and figuring every little nuance out. I can pay for the knowledge of somebody who has gone before me. And then I can try it out. I can implement what works for me. I can leave the rest. I can implement what works for me and then figure out, huh, okay, can I do this differently? Can I tweak this? Would it be even more effective if I did that? Can I take the nugget I got from this one and add it to the nugget I got from this one? And then what happens?
Mix it up a bit, yeah. It's like a puzzle. You can, I mean, I completely resonate. It's like you find something that can do one thing, and it's like a jigsaw puzzle. It might be good for one thing could do a lot, but it's only a little small part that you want from that part. And then there's something else that you could do a lot, but there's only a little small part that you could do for that. Instead of using both of them, just take the little small parts and just bash them together.
Yeah, it can be overwhelming otherwise. Mm. And, you know, that's one of the things with my book that I was really proud with, is I wrote it literally during COVID, in response to COVID, in response to watching my friends lose their businesses. So the whole point for me is I am taking you step by step by step with actionable things. I want you to implement as we go along. I want you to build the business as you're reading the book. And, you know, I want you to take advantage of the ungodly amount of money that I've spent and the years that I've spent learning this stuff. Use my book as a shortcut to go further and faster. You don't need to buy all those things. I tell you where I got the information. If you want to pay $2,000 to this one and $10,000 to this one and $14,000 to this one and, you know, $9,000 to this one, they will happily take your money. You can go and... You can go and sign up for all of their programs. They exist. They're all still around. But you don't have to. I mean, that's the whole point of being able to piggyback off other people. It's why you network. It's why you get into peer groups. It's what do you know that can help me, and will you teach it to me?
Yeah.
It makes zero sense for us all to go spend the money and the time. I mean, if you've just lost your business, if you're the only breadwinner, if you're single or your business is the business income for the whole house, you have a mortgage to pay or rent to pay or a car payment to pay or dog food to buy or lights to keep on or, you know, food that you need to eat. You don't have time or money to go and take 1,000 courses.
Yeah, of course not, definitely not.
So that, I mean, that's kind of the point. It's, I wrote it like as is, this is real talk, do this, do this, do this. It's not fluffy, it's not eloquent. It's step one, step two, step three. Go here, do this, make a list of this, you know, make this chart, figure this out. Here's what your product suite should look like. Here's how you figure it out. A, B, C, D, because it is designed to get people up and running like immediately. Yeah. And, you know, my friends now have seen kind of the first draft before I sent it to the publisher to be edited and formatted. I sent it to them since they inspired it. And they're like, oh my God, you have to do a course. So now I'm developing a course. So I bought Kajabi, and now I'm building the course based on
This is what you've done. You've created something. You created it. It's a snowball. You're snowballing now. That's it.
It is totally snowballing. So now people, they're calling. They're like, can you do a consultation? You know, I don't need a full coaching thing, but can you give me a pivot plan? Yeah. And I'm like, all right. So we get on it.
Yeah, because some people just want to be pointed in the right direction. They're already halfway there. They just want to know, are they going in that direction? What is the best way?
Or how can they go further, faster? How can they build on what they need quickly?
Show them the door, and then they go, cool, I know where I'm going now. They go, off you go, little one.
Run. Yep, bye-bye. Call me if you need me. I'll be checking up on you.
So it just really proves nowadays, like, there is ways, instead of sitting there watching Netflix, twirling your thumbs, waiting for the world to give you something, get up off your ass and do things, you know?
Yeah.
Put in the work and you can do it. Doesn't mean, because you're stuck at home, doesn't mean you can't do anything. You've got the opportunity here. You've got everything in your house.
Yeah.
Internet, computers, laptops, iPads, TV, anything you want, you've got it. You can do it. And if it's free, Jesus Christ, you've got to have to take advantage of it, really.
Yeah. And we're all sitting at home, right? Some places are starting to open. I'm still under lockdown. We have not opened yet. But even so, the world is different. We are not going back to life as it was beforehand. It will be a new normal. It will look differently. And one of the things that I don't think is going to go back is that everybody in the world is going to go back to their office. And no, people are like, ooh, working from home is awesome.
And it's going to be good.
Yeah. And, you know, companies, you're still productive. And yes, sometimes you may need to go back in and there will be a balance and whatnot. But I think a lot of corporations or brick and mortar businesses are also saying, huh, maybe I don't need this huge space with offices for all of my people. Maybe I could save money as the company if I got a smaller space and had a rotating workforce in. And, you know, I think there's going to be so many industry changes that, you know, why not take advantage of the free resources? They're here. They're not going away.
And that's the biggest thing that I really have. I'm going to go, my little rant, this is my biggest bugbear, is when someone, you give someone advice and you tell them, this is what you can do. You got a 9-to-5 job. I haven't got time to do that. What do you mean? Well, I work during the day and I have to come home and do this. Well, what time do you go to bed? Probably about 11 o'clock. Well, what are you doing between, the kids go to sleep about 7, 8 o'clock, between 8 and 12?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just chilling out. I have to relax. You know, I'm winding through the day. I balls to that. What time do you go to bed? Oh, 12. What time do you wake up? 6 or 8? Oh, no, I'll go to bed at 10 because I need my 8 hours. Why do you need 8 hours of sleep? No one needs 8 hours of sleep anymore. I mean, come on, sort your life out. This is the biggest thing. When someone says, I don't have time, why? Oh, it just winds me up. I'm stopping myself having a little hissy fit right now because I hate it.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you spend the time between 8 and 12 where you're sitting there with your feet up watching Netflix or do nothing to actually better yourself and use that. So when you do your 9-to-5 job that you always complain to me that you hate and you want to do something different, you've got an opportunity to better yourself now. So don't come at me when you're sitting there, I hate my job. Well, you've got an opportunity to do something about it. You get no excuses.
Yeah. I wrote the book literally from 7 or 7:30 at night until midnight because I have to keep working my jobs. Like, and they're kind of like demanding jobs. I mean, I'm the dean of 2 schools at a university and the staff attorney to a federal judge. Like, we have things to do. I don't get to, even in quarantine, even at home, I don't get to do non-work things during work time. From 8 to 5:30 or 6 is work time. After that, it's, you know, do a little workout, like a 30-minute workout that I can find for free online because there's all the free resources. You know, grab some dinner and then go sit my butt right back at the computer and work on the things for me. Like, that's the thing. And for the impact that I want to make on this world. I know quarantine has been really hard on a lot of people. If they're in marriages, it's either going to make or break the marriages. If they've got kids, now all of a sudden, you know, not only are they a parent, but they're a teacher and they've got all these other things. I get that. But like you said, when the kids go to bed, take some time after that to build the life that you want. It all goes back to making the decision. It all goes back to taking control. If I want to do more with my life, if I want to build a legacy of impact, which is what I live for, if I want to change the world, if I want to help people to be more, to do more, to have more, to feel more free, to feel more alive, to be more positive, to find more joy, then I have to invest in myself. And if I'm sitting there and I'm investing from 8 to 6 or 8 to 5:30 or whatever the case may be on a given day in someone else's business, in someone else's dreams, then why wouldn't I invest that in myself? And yeah, I could sit around and watch a movie, but that's not investing in myself. And that's not giving me the life that I want. That's not filling up my cup. That's not moving me to build the life that I want or make the impact that I want or be who I want to be.
Yeah.
And so when people say, we all have 24 hours in a day, I don't have any more time than anybody else. And I go to sleep without fail. I am in the bed by midnight and I do not get up before 6:30 or 7. Like, it's not happening. I'm not sacrificing my sleep. I really like a good 7 to 8 hours. I'm fine with 6. Once we get below 6, not a good idea. That's not a good idea.
But the thing is, as well, you're saying there as well, once you put that sort of effort into it, once you put that work in, it might take, it's not going to happen overnight, obviously, but the months of doing it, it starts to become easier because it's really the initial start. When you start to do anything, it's hard because you have to go over that initial hurdle. But then you get into that routine and you get into that, and then like 2 or 3, 4, 5, 7, maybe even a year of doing it, you've accomplished something, and then all of a sudden you've got something to show for it. And the amount of like kind of self, kind of I wouldn't say self-respect, but the amount of reward, self-reward, you can look back and go, I put this work in and look what I've got for it now. You know, and you're like, wow. And you feel, and again, that's a huge win. And that keeps you going.
Yeah.
I can do something else now. Look what I've done. I can do this. And it goes from everything, not just with like business and stuff, and it goes with everything.
Everything.
So it's just literally doing that, putting the little small bits in every day, chip away at it.
Yep.
And the rewards will come, definitely, without a doubt.
Yeah. And just knowing that, like, you're doing it for yourself. And if whatever it is, if you don't want to start a business, don't start a business. Learn a language, learn to play the guitar, learn to paint, whatever it is that you want to do, do it, because you're investing in yourself. And if you're not willing to invest in yourself, who's going to invest in you? No one's going to do for you what you're not willing to do for yourself. They're just not.
Definitely.
So you invest in yourself, you bring yourself joy, you bring yourself fulfillment, you celebrate yourself. Even that's, today is an awesome day. Whatever, like, you celebrate yourself. I mean, some days I've got laser focus and I'm super amazingly ridiculously productive. And other days, my focus is like 30 minutes. And
we all have
off days. For a while.
We all have
but off. Then... Yeah, so then it's learning to celebrate. Oh, I focused for 30 minutes. Yay! I accomplished one thing. It's just training yourself to celebrate your wins, because just like you said, it builds the momentum. Mm. I mean, if you beat yourself up, it's also just deciding where your focus is. Like, focusing on what you've accomplished or focusing what you didn't accomplish. We all have a to-do list every day. And the reality is that our to-do list is probably more than is humanly possible to get done in 24 hours.
Definitely.
So we can focus on that and then think of like all the things you didn't accomplish, or, oh, you're a failure, oh, you suck, oh, you're a loser, all this nonsense. Or you can focus on, oh my God, I got half a thing done today. Amazing. I'm moving towards getting like my list done. Yeah.
So, the book, is the book out yet? Is it available to buy yet? What's happening with it?
It is available for pre-order. And
I love the pre-order.
So it should be released in July, but it is available for pre-order right now on booksbyellie.com.
Oh, I love the plug.
Right? Booksbyellie.com. I pre-order your copy there.
There we go. We'll put the link in the description as well. Of course, put that in there so guys can check it out.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I just love it because, like I said, it's hands-on. It is a go-to practical guide. No theory, no fluff, but step-by-step.
Fantastic. You see, you got another book coming out as well.
I do. So I'm so excited. This is all going back to momentum. When you start, amazing things happen. Things snowball. So my second book is called The Authorities, and I am co-writing it with the legendary Bob Proctor and Les Brown.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, Les Brown.
Uh-huh. So Bob Proctor is, I don't know if you know the movie The Secret, but he is one of the stars of the movie The Secret. He's a really big guy on the law of attraction and attracting financial abundance.
Right.
So we're each taking different topics. Bob's, of course, on financial abundance. Les Brown, I mean, he's like an upcoming Tony Robbins. I mean, he is, you know, he's so well established.
I prefer Les Brown to Tony Robbins, to be fair. I think you can't say an upcoming. He's on par with Tony Robbins.
He is. I think Tony's just been around longer. That's the only reason why I said it.
Probably true. Upcoming.
But, you know, Les is amazing. And so he is bringing it home. He's handling all the mindset stuff. That is what Les does. That is what he is the master at. He is preaching in that book on mindset. So mine is on one of the movements I'm creating, one of my women's movements. It's called You Are Not Your Scars. And so it's kind of on how we can, we are not our scars. We're not our mental scars, our physical scars, our emotional scars, our childhood scars, our relationship scars, societal scars. We are none of that. And so it's how we kind of strip all of that and decide who we want to be, create who we want to be.
Wow.
So it's kind of the accumulation of, you know, all of my life experiences. So I am focusing on that in this book. And then Raymond Aron, he's another multiple New York Times best-selling author. He did both the Chicken Soup of the Soul series and the Books for Dummies series.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I know that.
Yeah, he's the only person in history to have done both series.
Wow.
So he's doing a big thing on branding, teaching branding and that. And then we'll have some other guest chapters as well. So super excited about the Authorities book.
It says literally just going to be like the Justice League.
Yeah.
For coming together and joining in with us. This is going to be,
yeah.
I wonder, excited. So
it's called the Authorities because it's the authorities on all these different things in one book for you.
Well, that's going to be amazing. What, when we're looking for this, is it still in early stages at the minute?
So it's still, we're still each finishing our sections. So we're still writing. And then it'll go to the editor and the formatter. So I think they're predicting an early fall, which works well since Unlocking Your Superpower is coming out in July. That gives a little bit of time in between.
Fantastic. So there we go. We've got another podcast we need to arrange then so we can talk about that book. So I'm excited to hear this.
Awesome. I'm so excited. And by that point, I'll have my e-courses will be up and running. And I'm looking to get the e-course for Unlocking Your Superpower done in June because, like, that's just like I poured myself into writing the book and I wrote the book, you know, in a couple of weeks. Same thing. I know that this is time sensitive. I know that people are losing their businesses or they got laid off or their spouse got laid off. And they've got to pay bills. So I want to get the course out in June so that people can go online. They can start taking it. It'll walk them through. It'll have all kinds of exercises. I'll be on there doing Q&As as well. So I started a Facebook community page so people can go there so that we can actually interact and do Q&As. Wow. Obviously, that's just Unlocking Your Superpower is the community page. It's free. But that way my focus is really on helping the people that need the help and getting that information out there and giving the implementable tools to people right now so that they're not having to wait months to start a business. They can start a business, start bringing in some income, you know, by July. That's the idea.
Fantastic. I was actually going to ask about what's next for you, but
Courses.
Is there anything next for you? Have you got anything else on the cards? Because I tell you what, you've done not too bad the past 10 weeks. I feel as if I need to go upstairs and have a word on myself right now and say, what are you doing? It's definitely got me thinking sort of thing. I might get your book and have a look at it, to be honest.
Awesome. I'll send it to you.
Oh, fantastic. There we go. There we go.
I'll even sign it for you.
Oh yeah, definitely have that. I'm going to keep it. I'm not even going to read it, so don't want to fold the pages just in case.
Oh, fold the pages.
That sounded really bad. I'm not even going to read it. Of course I'm going to read it. That's not me. I didn't mean it like that.
No. Yeah.
Ellie, I would wrap it up now, but it has been an absolute pleasure having you on today. I was excited beforehand, and I think this has been a great episode. Thank you so, so much for coming on. We'll definitely need to catch up and do a follow-up during, obviously, over the next few months.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This has been so much fun.
I appreciate it. So, well, hopefully everything goes well with the book. We'll put, obviously, links in the description of that, and the courses go well. And the new upcoming book, I'm looking forward to that, and I hope everything goes well.
Yeah, thank you so much. I look forward to talking with you soon.
No problem. So thanks very much, Ellie.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
And we're good. We're out. There we go. Okay. Fantastic. How do you think that went, Ellie? That went really
well. That was fun.
It was really good fun, that.
And I think it was good. I think your listeners will really like it because we went all over the place.
That's what I like, you know, it's just a conversation. It's not just like kind of honed in. It's literally having a conversation and going from that. And we cover a lot of topics there. I thought that was absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for that. I think
that was fun.
I'm going to jump on this. I'm going to jump. A lot of information. And I always say, like, a good podcast, they always say it's educational but fun at the same time.
And
I think we covered all the bases, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, I think also because we covered different topics and like, whoever's in your audience, I think there's something they can get from it.
Yeah, no matter. There's something for everyone, really, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Cool. Well, I'm going to get this obviously sorted. What I'll do, I mean, how long did we do there? God, that was a good hour and a half. I love that.
Yeah.
So I'll get this obviously sorted out. I think I'll probably publish it, I would say, Tuesday. But I'll do, I'll email you over all the details and stuff of where you find it and all that sort of stuff.
And I'll publicize it for you.
Fantastic. I appreciate that. If you can send over, obviously, the links to the book links and obviously Facebook groups and all that sort of stuff, and I'll put it in the description so people know where to find you and all that sort of thing. And we can go from there.
Awesome. I will do it. I'll send that over.
Ellie, thank you again so much. Have a cracking day, and we'll definitely catch up soon.
Yeah. Thank you. Have a good night. Enjoy what's left of it.
I will do. Thanks so much.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.